Eugenie Grandi by Honoré de Balzac, read by Peter Joyce. In some provincial towns, there are certain houses whose appearance inspires a feeling of melancholy, akin to that inspired by the gloomiest cloister, the most desolate moor, or the most depressing ruin. We may say that there are in these houses the silence of the cloister, the barrenness of the moor, and the fossilized bones of the ruin. Life moves on so quietly that a stranger would think they were uninhabited, did he not suddenly meet the pale, cold glance of a motionless being whose half-monastic features appear above the window-sill at the sound of a strange footstep. These elements of melancholy exist in the external aspect of a dwelling-house at Samoa, at the end of the steep street leading to the chateau in the upper part of the town. This street, little frequented today, warm in summer, cold in winter, and dark in some places, is remarkable for the sonority of its pebbly pavement, always dry and clean, for its narrowness and its winding course, and for the peace that reigns in its houses, which belong to the old town and are dominated by the fortifications. Buildings 300 years old are still solid and unshaken, although built of wood, and the diverse styles of architecture contribute to the originality that makes this part of Samoa especially interesting to antiquarians and artists. One can hardly pass these houses without admiring the enormous beams, whose ends are carved with curious faces, and which crown the ground floor of several of them with a bas-relief black with age. On one side are transverse timbers covered with slate, making blue lines against the frail walls of a building terminating in a high-pitched roof, which is bending beneath the weight of years, the rotting shingles being twisted and distorted by the alternate action of the rain and sun. In another direction we see worn, blackened window-sills, with delicate carving that can hardly be distinguished, which seem too light for the brown earthen pot containing some poor working girl's carnations or rose bushes. Farther on are doors studded with enormous nails, with which the genius of our ancestors formed family hieroglyphics, the sense of which will never be discovered. Perhaps a Protestant may have made his profession of faith by that means. Perhaps some leaguer thus cursed Henry IV. Some bourgeois may have traced the insignia of his official nobility, the glory of his forgotten shrievalty. The entire history of France is written on those doors. Beside the rough-walled, trembling structure wherein the artisan has deified his plane, rises the mansion of a nobleman, where some traces of his crest, disfigured by the various revolutions that have convulsed the province since 1789, can still be seen upon the keystone of the arch of the stone gateway. In this street, the ground-floor apartments, devoted to business purposes, are neither shops nor warehouses. Those who are interested in the Middle Ages will find there the ouvrière of our ancestors in all their artless simplicity. These low-studded rooms, which have neither front windows, nor showcases, nor glass doors, are deep and dark, and entirely devoid of ornament without or within. The door is in two parts, roughly bound with iron. The upper part opens in and folds back. The lower, furnished with a bell worked by a spring, is constantly opening and closing. Light and air reach this damp, cavernous place, either through the upper part of the door, or through the space between the ceiling and the little wall, waist-high, in which are set solid shutters, removed in the morning, replaced at night, and held in place by bars of iron bolted in. These walls are used to display the wares of the occupant. No charlatanism here. According to the nature of the business, the specimens consist of two or three tubs of salt and codfish, a few packages of sailcloth, cordage, strips of brass hanging from the beams of the ceiling,